Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Whether you're tuning in through Conversations Radio Network, we welcome you. For those joining us in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we're glad that you could tune in, as well as those tuning in on the East Coast in Atlanta at 106 Live. We're glad you all could join us as well. Meg Little Riley is making her first appearance on our program today to talk to us not only about her journey as an author, but what it's been like for her to be able to share an amazing story in the book, We Are Unprepared, with the world, and to already see the response as well. Now, the book kind of circles around a physical storm that is looming, but it also deals with some storms that all of us can relate to that have the opportunity to be able to not only to break us apart, but also, of course, to be able to challenge us in ways that we did not imagine. We're going to talk to Meg not only about the journey of writing this book, but what it's been like for her already to hear from all of you. If you're just now hearing about it, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get your own copy. But Meg, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, the pleasure is definitely all mine, Meg. Congratulations to you again on the book, a recently released, again, We Are Unprepared. I mean, there's so many different layers of this book, and we're going to get into a couple of them as we go throughout the segment. But, Meg, what has it been like for you already to see the way that people are responding to it?
It's been really, really fun and interesting, the conversations I've been having. There are different aspects of it that seem to resonate with different people. One of the things about the book is that it's sort of it examines the different ways in which we all cope with fear and mounting anxiety. And so the different characters in the book all sort of turn to different vices and comforts and explanations, and each of those things seem to touch a different spot for different readers, which has been really interesting.
Yeah, and I think we all kind of, for me, of course, being here on the radio dial in Mississippi, Meg, we definitely know about storms here in the South for sure,
mm-hmm.
and we're kind of accustomed to them, especially, you know, this year, of course, what's been happening in Louisiana in particular with the flooding. You know, I thought about, as I was reading the book, and you kind of, you know, take us on this journey through the character Ash, and we'll get more into that, but, you know, there is that conversation that Ash has, you know, about, you know, preparing, and even going to family and saying, you know, you need to make sure that you're prepared. You know, do you have everything you need? And that whole thought of, oh, you know, this is, you know, we're going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. I think it's so, you know, we see people do that with these literal storms, but also
mm-hmm.
when we're going through emotional things in our lives and challenges, we think, oh, you know, I'm strong enough to handle whatever. Did you know going into this book, Meg, that you were going to tackle those different layers of what a storm could be?
No, I definitely didn't. When I initially conceived of the story, I knew it was going to be a storm, and I wanted to sort of look at how that looming threat stresses the personal and communal and even broader societal parts of our lives. But as I started writing, and I kept kind of peeling back the layer of that fear onion, the story just drew me closer and closer to this marriage and this relationship, because the corrosive effect that that everyone's inner turmoil and fear has, if you follow it, it takes you to a pretty intimate place, and so it ended up being a very a domestic story, and a story about love, and even a bit of a storm in the bedroom as well. It was a surprise to me, but it felt like a really logical place to go.
Right, for sure. And I think, you know, as we're able to see, you know, the characters, how they're dealing with what is coming. And the interesting thing is recognizing what's coming. But then it really has to do with how they prepare for it and how they deal with it. I thought that was such
mm-hmm.
an interesting thing as well for me as a reader. So take us back a little bit, Meg, because this is your debut novel. I mean, when did
mm-hmm.
you first start coming up with this idea for the story that is not now we are unprepared?
Well, I was working in the Obama administration, first at the U.S. Treasury as a spokesperson, and then in the White House Communications Office as a spokesperson on budget and fiscal issues. So I was busy, but this story had sort of been building inside of me for a while. I'm a native Vermonter, rural country girl at heart, and I knew that my first book would be would take place in Vermont. And as my husband and I were thinking about starting our own family, I think I was interested in grappling with some of my own anxieties about what the landscape and the natural world is going to look like in the future, and in general, some of the bigger changes that are afoot, and certainly the storms that we're seeing, which are coming with more intensity and frequency. No one knows this better than you folks. I had a lot of bigger questions about what the future holds. I think one of the triggering moments for me was in 2011. I was in the White House, and Hurricane Irene was blowing through the Northeast. And I remember sitting at my desk and looking up at a screen, and CNN had live footage of my hometown in southern Vermont with a river of water flooding through it. And it felt like science fiction. I was just choking back tears. It was the strangest moment. And not only because it's a place that mattered to me, but also because it's a landlocked state, and this isn't the kind of storm that's supposed to affect, you know, I mean, it really felt like changes
right.
were afoot. So that was when it all started to come together for me.
Yeah. And did you know going into this then, as the story did start coming to you then, Meg, that you wanted to tell it in the singular voice, and that Ash was going to be that one to be able to take us through this journey?
Yeah, I did. I knew it was going to be first person because it's a lot of this is about sort of the inner turmoil, the storms inside as much as the storms outside. So that felt like it made sense. And a number of, I keep getting asked about why I wrote it from a male perspective. And that's a pretty simple reason. It's only that Ash and I have a few things in common, native Vermonters and a love of the natural world and all that. And I was worried that, and maybe this was just a sort of novice nervousness, but I was worried that because we had some things in common, I would either end up, if it was a female character, I would have ended up writing it too autobiographically, or I would try to do the opposite, or readers might infer it was autobiographical. So that just having that distance of gender was made things a little easier for me. But it was also surprisingly, I think this story is about really fundamental human responses, and so gender was less of an issue than I thought it was, because as the storm approaches and everyone's fear mounts, it's like so many other things sort of strip away from their lives, and it really felt like I was just writing about a person.
Yeah, I think that is the amazing thing. We're going to get more into that. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome to our program today Meg Little-Riley. We're talking with her not only about her debut novel, We Are Unprepared, but the different storms that she kind of introduces us to. One of the most fascinating characters for me in the book, Meg, has to be that actually rhymes with you. It's Peg. A scientist. And there's this great dialogue that takes place. And I think this is so, you know, we say on this program a lot, Meg, that I think fiction has a way of getting us to address the truths of our lives and of the world in a way that's less judgmental, and that we feel freer to talk because, hey, it's just fiction. You know, it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
You have this character that seems to be so contradictory, you know, in Peg. You know, here is Peg, a scientist, but someone who's very connected to something larger than of course the work, but also of course than the world around. I think, you know, that great conversation you have with Ash and Peg, you know, I want to actually read a bit of it for those who have the print edition of the book. It's found on page 194, and there Peg is talking with Ash, you know, about the world, and this is what Peg says there. I grew up in the country, spent all of my time alone in the woods or on the shore. I knew the natural world like a close friend, and because we lived in such a remote area, I didn't have many of those. Ash, I became a scientist because I've always felt a sort of supernatural connection with the earth. I wanted to study it and know it, but I always remember that there are unknowable things about nature. That's the supernatural part. Science only takes you so far. And I love that. I thought that was a powerful passage for sure, Meg. What was it like for you in creating Peg and kind of having these different ideas of someone who knows science but also realizes that science is only part of the answer?
Well, it's so interesting you brought her up. You're the first person to ask about her, and I love this character. I think Peg probably is a little bit of a, there probably is a little autobiographical projection in her, because I'm a firm believer in the climate science. I think this is something we should all be talking about. But there is also something, call it spiritual, religious, magical, whatever it is, about it. If you grow up in a place where the land matters to you, it can be, you know, the ocean, the mountains, whatever it is, there is an intangible feeling there that is bigger and older and inexplicable with our scientific language. So I wanted to find a respectful and hopefully sophisticated way of acknowledging that these two things are not incompatible. That's a pretty deep core belief for me.
And I think, you know, for many people, though, Meg, you know, when they think about science, they do not automatically think about faith. But there is that thought, too, with Ash, after having that conversation, you know, with Peg, about the thought of where Ash was at that point and where Ash was. And that continues on, actually, on page 195. When, of course, the conversation was over, this is what, of course, Ash was thinking and we're able to know. The vibration she reportedly felt in nature was a startling concept that stayed with me. I think my younger self, the one who spent an entire childhood exploring the woods around my house and diving deep into the science of our wilderness, knew what she was talking about. Grown up me had a more difficult time with it. And I think that brings up the interesting thing about, you know, I try to encourage our audience here, Meg, to remember when you were younger and how nothing seemed impossible. Everyone wanted to be Superman or, you know, or something great. And then mm-hmm. as life kind of happens, you become more measured, and some would say reality sets in. You begin limiting yourself. Was that kind of what Ash was realizing, too, that some things were easy to believe when you were younger than when you've gone through experiences as an adult?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think – and that's one of the cool things about this character is I love – it's aspirational. I think it's nice to know. And I think that there are adults like this who manage to – hang on to that sense of wonder and possibility and to kind of keep pushing back on those borders of logic a little bit. And I think a lot of those people are some of the greatest thinkers of our time, in fact. It's an expansive way to consider your life and the world. If you leave a little room for the unexplained and the supernatural, even in a way. And some of that in her character is mirrored in the younger character of August, the 7-year-old, which is why they also have a sort of unique understanding between the two of them.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, this storm that is looming that you write about, Meg, and I'll talk around this so I don't spoil it yet for those who have not had a chance to read it. There is the thing, and you had mentioned the word fear earlier, and I think that's interesting and one of the themes for me in the book, and that is that sometimes things are not as bad as we think they might be, mm-hmm. but even if the worst does happen, realizing what is important, Ash definitely gets that. Realizing the things that really matter. And remember, you know, for Ash, that being Pia, but also, of course, knowing that they could continue, not knowing how they would continue, though. That uncertainty, though, was one of the things that would be able to hover above Ash for sure. Is that one of the things that you've realized in your own life, that regardless of the challenges that we face, the important thing is to realize that we can get through them and that we can be able to move forward after them?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the in writing this book and sort of putting myself in the shoes of each of the characters, it really forced me to think about who I would be at a truly terrifying moment. I don't think I've ever experienced anything quite as frightening as what the characters in the story think they are experiencing. And you're right. A lot of it is their expectation. The fear is the expectation more than the event itself. And I like Ash's worldview, I think that he starts to see through all of the sort of the darkness that some of the folks around him don't, and he gets a real clarity on what he wants his life to look like. But I don't think I or any of us have that kind of clarity all the time. So there, I also had to sort of acknowledge that, probably we're not always all heroes at moments like that. And one of the things that happens in this small town is that, it's a sort of an eclectic mix of people, young and old, rich and poor, and they were coexisting fairly well until the effects of the fear started drawing harder lines around them, and their differences became more prominent, and people sort of, they take their respective corners and teams. And that, I think that's a pretty basic human response. And I'm fairly hopeful about most people. And I think most of us can transcend that, but I think there's also a natural draw to it as well.
Yeah. I think that is for sure. Did you find yourself, I think a question that is definitely valid to ask you, Meg, about this journey was totally different than what you have been known for professionally, that being now a published author, especially of fiction. How did you get over the fear or of what might happen, how it might be perceived, or if you could actually do it?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, the reason it took me so long to do it is because I was, frankly a very naked thing to do. I mean, all the characters are in some way you, and it's terrifying, and that's why it took so long. And then at some point I just felt like I can't wake up every morning and not write this book any longer. And so that was, and when you feel that kind of passion and commitment and insanity, perhaps, I think that there's a sureness in that determination, but it started on me on a path of like, boy, there's a lot of rejection. There's a lot of criticism. It takes writing the path from starting to write a book to getting it published and putting it out there. It takes years. And even if you have a relatively smooth journey on it, it's going to mean dozens of rejections when you need an agent and then a publisher and then the criticisms and edits. And this was the most amazing, next to having and raising young children, this is the most transformative thing I've ever been through, because at some point I realized I'm still standing. I'm kind of having fun, actually. I mean, it hurts a lot and your ego gets bruised. And then once you realize you can sustain it and you can withstand it, you feel kind of invincible.
Yeah, for sure. Just like the characters in We Are Unprepared. You know, when you come out of something that you think is going to be so bad, you're like, okay, well, I got through that. I can get through anything. We can move forward. You know, we can still be great. And I think that is a great thing for sure. Great conversation with you, Meg. Again, everyone, Meg Little Riley has been our guest. The book is We Are Unprepared. It's available now through our friends at Amazon.com or through your favorite local bookstore if they don't have it. They'll be more than happy to be able to order it for you. Meg, you are on social media the way that the rest of us are. How can our audience stay connected with you and keep up what's coming up next for you?
Absolutely. You can find me at meglittleriley.com or weareunprepared.com, and all my social media links are there as well. I'd love to hear from folks.
All right. I'll be posting my review on Amazon.com. Definitely invite anyone else who's actually read the book to make sure you guys do the same thing. Let Meg know and others know what you think about the book. And Meg, congratulations again to you, and thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. What a nice conversation. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Glad to have you. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Meg, don't worry. Thanks to our friends online, this show is podcasted completely for free, so you can go back and catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media site. So head over to facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. I've already tagged Meg to make it easy for you guys to find her too, but if you just click on that link, you can listen to the show completely for free and share it with your friends from there. The show can also be downloaded for free, so you can actually download it to your device or, of course, to your computer and be able to share it that way as well. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.